This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is BFM 89.9, 8:37 in the morning, 2nd, 7, 2021. You're with me, Koo Soo Chuang and Philip C. But before that, let's talk about migrant workers.
Yes, according to Human Resource Minister Dato' Sri M. Saravanan, there is no plan to legalise migrant workers at the moment. Instead, he told the Parliament that the government has introduced the Return Recalibration Programme and Labour Recalibration Programme for the group to address the issue of jobless migrant workers here. Additionally, Home Minister Dato' Sri Hamza Zainuddin has said that employers will have 2 weeks to employ the 280,000 migrant workers who have registered under the Labour Recalibration Programme.
According to the Home Minister, of the 280,000 workers, about 120,000 of them are involved in the plantation sector, and the number only represents between 20 and 30% of the labour needed by the country's plantation companies. With restrictions still in place, though, in terms of bringing in migrant workers into the country, would these programmes introduced by the government be enough to address the labour shortages? For more on this, we have with us now Ko Yu Ling, the political economist of Sergi Enam Advisors. Yu Ling, good morning. Do you agree with the introduction of the Return Recalibration Programme and Labour Recalibration Programme as a solution for jobless migrant workers?
Hi, morning. Well, both programmes seem to seek regularisation of the illegal or undocumented workers these 2 years, and particularly Peninsula Malaysia. If we look at what's been happening in recent months, I don't think things have changed so much. The recalibration program has been seen as a bit ineffective because the key issues are that the undocumented need to have their passports in order to legalize and had not run away. And this problem is quite complex, but many have done so because companies have tended to withhold worker passports. And on top of that, we do have the situation where companies are still quite wary and worried about exposing the number of undocumented they have. So it's been at a rather impasse.
So let me just get it straight. You think that the program has still a lot of gaps that is not being resolved yet. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, I'm not really seeing much change in the opinion in the industry people. But, you know, the figures which came about are quite interesting, quite big. Hmm. And I was doing a channel check with the plantation people, and they're sort of scratching their head as well on this very big figure of 120,000. So I think there needs to be maybe a bit more of a sit down.
So this number you say sounds ambitious and large. Is that correct? Are you worried about its implementability then?
Well, you know, the industry seems to be still talking about these 32,000 workers, you know, for plantations, right? Who are coming in from overseas. I mean, I think the context is that there has been a shortage for quite some time now, quite a few years. And if you read the headlines, actually the world over, the shortages have been getting worse and worse. So the shortage has been quite getting more acute for Malaysian industry, and it's just not unique here, not unique to plantations anymore, and also not unique globally. So this figure is kind of puzzling because 120,000 is a very big figure. If it's supposed to be just Peninsula, you know, nationally, we're talking about 700,000 workers. So, I mean, the plantation people are saying, oh, where are all these people? So, yeah, I think maybe policy and industry needs to sit down a bit harder on these figures because we're not sure where it's coming from.
So if policy and industry do sit together and thrash out the issues, Yu Ling, where might a possible solution be located?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we genuinely think there is a shortage and there aren't all these surplus people sitting around. I mean, where are they living in Malaysia? A lot of them have gone back, right? Because there have been certain repatriations and things. And there hasn't been entry. So there's been a net loss. So I think quite a few people are puzzled about whether there are, you know, heaps of people sitting around not working.
Yeah, because your point is that you can't account for them. That's the biggest challenge, right?
Well, yes. I mean, I guess on the positive side, I was talking to a doctor and, you know, there's some slight worry about undocumented people not having had their COVID shots. But I think there seems to be a good opinion among our health sector that they have been coming in and they have been accepting whatever documents they have, right, without, you know, regard to legality or whatever. So that's a good point. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's not really not possible for people to sit around not working here, that many anyway.
Well, Yulin, it does appear that this is an issue of governance, because how can people, you know, basically go around Malaysia and not be, you know, monitored or identified? And this is a big number. We talked about how illegal migrant workers and legal migrant workers, there's been a gap in terms of their census. You know, how do the policymakers address this, especially since we've seen various transgressions of this policy, most recently with Utter IMS?
Well, you know, the numbers have always been puzzling us, you know, academics and think tankers and economists. It's always been a challenge on these numbers. And I mean, to be fair, the undocumented people are hiding as well, right? If they see people knocking on the doors, and companies also hide them, you know, send them into the jungle with some sulfur. I mean, that's some of the anecdotal stories that go around, you know, for some sectors anyway. But yeah, I mean, if we get to the issues of ATA, I mean, I think what's interesting is there's a bit of a, I don't know whether to call it a gap, but, you know, poor labor conditions and structurally weak status of labor in Malaysia, capitalism is a major issue. And, you know, academics, policy folk are quite conscious of this, but the unfairness narrative, businesses talk about this, right? It's like, you know, the West is unfair. And then, you know, there's a question of lack of political will, but I think the politicians are really reflecting what the business lobby really feels about, right? So there's this pursuit of political solutions. But then what happens when you have a company like ATA, which is a reportedly 80% of their business is Dyson? Dyson is unhappy and the share price tanks 80%. So, you know, and you have plantation sector where by reports from logistics people, Malaysia palm oil is being shunned and has to be sold, you know, in the cut price Indian market. It's really a knotty question. And I think there is a gap between what businesses really feel and how their destination markets are moving very hard and fast on anti-modern slavery.
I mean, it's very clear. It has to take external forces, right, to put pressure on the palm oil players, the glove makers, these electrical businesses. It needs to get corporates like Dyson. It needs to get US governments like the Fed and also markets to basically stop all these practices, isn't it? We can't put the pressure internally.
Well, yeah, that's the irony, right? I mean, when US CVP comes in, you know, you could be, I mean, I think other companies have also faced fines of $500,000 US dollars. That's 2 million fine. That's more substantive than a Malaysian domestic compound fine, right? The minister does say that, you know, they are going to compound the companies and they haven't paid up. You know, even if it's 2 million, if you have a company of 150, 200 million a year net profit of pre-tax profit rather, that's a 1%. I mean, who cares? But when customers pull or they refuse to get your cargo and you have to divert it to goodness knows where, then yes, that seems to be what's biting. And it seems to be what's driving the ministry to say, yes, we're going to ratify now the ILO, International Labour Organization Protocol.
Yeah, Yulin, do offer some perspective here, because it's not as if the United States, being the richest and most developed country in the world, is free of such accusations. For example, Apple outsources its production and Foxconn in China, you know, suffers from these accusations of poor labor rights. And of course, you've also got millions of undocumented migrant workers in California and what have you. Is there an elegant solution to be found in another jurisdiction around the world, so anywhere around the world, as a template for Malaysia to follow?
Yeah, not really. I mean, everyone is full of hypocrisy and gaps and everything. And I think that's where a lot of Malaysian businesses say that, look, you know, you're being hypocritical. But the problem is that companies make their own decisions, right? Even if a country like the US has hypocritical standards and can't implement things properly themselves, you know, nowadays, big companies, big brands, they just move their business. And you can't really hang your hat on political solutions or, you know, this is a political problem and kick the can down the road because, you know, your big customers or your big markets, your competitors will take a shot at your weakness and grab your business and, you know, share price collapse 80%. Wow.
Yulin, as always, thank you for your time and your insights. That was Kor Yulin, political economist at Sergi Inam Advisors. You know, just very quickly, Malaysia's not the only culprit here. And I think that's the message here. And I think more I guess, distressingly. There is no template for perfection anywhere in the world. Not that perfect exists.
Well, I mean, progress is the road to perfection, in my view. So the question, of course, is what are the immediate things we should do, right? What are the things we can do? And I'm a bit worried when Yuling says that it's up into the hands of the big corporates. How do you make sure government flexes its muscle, put in place the right regulations, you know, to ensure that we protect not only our fellow citizens, but also the workers that live in this location?
And perhaps it takes institutional money to force better practices, for example, with listed companies.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.